But a few other places before, but that's our basic text in thinking about the final warning. We're in the midst of a series of the greatest week in history, the final week of Jesus' life. And we're thinking about this week, the final warning. Christ comes to the end of his life, and it's Tuesday afternoon. He's at the temple and the Mount of Olives as he's giving these speeches here on Tuesday. We've noticed last week that Christ will usher a final blame, where he will give information on who he blames for his upcoming crucifixion and why these things had come about. And we notice he was targeting the Jewish leaders, and that was in chapters 22 and 23, where Christ really focused upon the hypocrisy of the Jewish leaders, which have led to their rejection of him, and he assigns blame upon their religious leaders. And then now, as he comes to the end of his life, he's thinking about warning, and he wants the people to be aware and to be made to consider their future. It's very common for people when they come to their end of the life to think about, what do I want to share for my family for the future? What do I want to maybe warn them about for the future? Maybe what do I want them to do in the future? And Jesus is thinking for us, here's what I want to warn you about for the future. Here's what I want you to do in the future. What I want you to be aware of. And so this will take place in Matthew 24, 25, Mark 13, and Luke 21 are all the passages that I would encourage you to study in this section. Notice, Jesus is going to give some final warnings, but we must understand that before he gives these final warnings, he had given some earlier warnings. In Matthew chapter 11, earlier in his teaching, he had warned about his second coming. In Matthew 11, he tells the cities there that it would have been better for, or it is better for Tyre and Sidon. They would have repented long ago in sackcloth and ashes. But I tell you, it would be more bearable in the day of judgment for Tyre and Sidon than for you. And you, Capernaum, will you be exalted in heaven? Will you be brought down to Hades? For if the mighty works done in you had been done in Sodom, it would have remained until this day. But I tell you that it will be more tolerable on the day of judgment for the land of Sodom than for you. Here in his ministry, he's talking about the day of judgment and the need to repent and be ready for the day of judgment. In Matthew 13, he tells the famous parable about the parable of the weeds, and he tells about how at the end of the age, in his explanation of that, in verses 36 and following, at the end of the age, he will return, and he calls it, verse 39, the harvest, and he will reap his harvest. And the weeds, those representing those who have been sown by Satan and are the wicked of the world, will be cast, he says, into the fiery furnace, verse 42, and they will experience a place where they'll be weeping and gnashing of teeth. The harvest will come. He will cast the weeds away. The harvest of wheat will be gathered up. He's talking about the end of time. He's warning about the end of time. In Luke's account, in Luke chapter 13, he warns us that unless we repent, we will all likewise perish. And then in chapter 16, he tells the story of the rich man and Lazarus. And in that story, he emphasizes about upon our deaths that we will go to a place of either punishment or a place of great paradise. And he emphasizes that the poor man, the beggar, Lazarus, was receiving blessings after his death, while the rich man who had fared sumptuously in this life was in torments after death. And he encourages us then at the end of that story, he warns us that we should heed the prophets. We should heed, in their context, Moses and the prophets, the word of God. He's warning about being prepared, about being ready for the Lord's return, and about our own death. There were many earlier warnings. In John chapter 5, 25 through 30, He warns about His return. And when He comes back, all who are in the grave will hear His voice and will come forth. And so He warns about the end of time. Now, when He comes to the end of His life, then He's going to give a final warning. When I was thinking about this lesson and earlier warnings, it reminded me of stories I'd heard about Pearl Harbor and how we ignored some of the warnings, not intentionally, but how we ignored some of the warnings that could have prevented such a disastrous defeat. For example, on that day, that very Sunday morning, December 7th, 1941, a man named Kermit A. Tyler, who was a first lieutenant, was on temporary duty at the Radar Information Center. He had only received a few hours of training for this, and it was only his second time to be on the job, and wasn't, as I mentioned, very experienced with this. But when one of the radar operators noticed a blip on their radar screen indicating a large number of aircraft about 132 miles away, he replied, "Don't worry about it." He expected, and there was actually plans for this, that there was a large fleet of airplanes coming in from Hamilton Field in California. And so he expected or thought that was those airplanes. And he didn't look into it any farther, didn't have any concern. He was found that not negligent in his work later on as they investigated all these things, and he didn't do anything wrong. But he did receive a warning that could have changed history if he would have heeded the warning. But you know, he wasn't the only one. When you dive into that further, you realize that actually, we had been having warnings, some indicate as far back as three decades before. One man by the name of Mitchell, who was in our naval, in our Navy and things, had written actually a book. He had talked about it in 1910 in some of his studies and some of his experiences overseas. And he predicted that in the future, Japan and America would be at war as tension continued to build. 15 years before Pearl Harbor, he wrote a book. And he wrote a book about how he expected, one of the parts of that, was he expected the Japanese to attack Pearl Harbor with using over 100 bombers to destroy our fleet. Here's one of our soldiers in the Navy, higher up, saying, "This is going to happen," warning us 15 years ahead. And then in the months preceding it, our Navy and military officers have been able to translate the Japanese codes. And they knew that something big was happening. And there was negotiations going on with Washington and things, and they knew that November 29th was the set deadline. And the information they were receiving is that if things don't get worked out, something big is going to happen after November 29th. Now they thought, and they were thinking that it would be the Philippines or some of the other adjacent closer islands over there. No one was thinking Pearl Harbor. Now they had received all these warnings, all this information, that saying there's going to be an attack, something big is going to happen. But they didn't think, they didn't prepare, and they were caught off guard. They were caught sleeping, if you will, early one Sunday morning. Earlier warnings. Christ had given earlier warnings. And now He's coming to the end. He's giving a final warning. And He wants us to wake up and take notice and not sleep through this warning. Notice He warns out of love. He doesn't warn out of trying to manipulate or trying to just get His way. In fact, we see in Matthew 23 that He had wept over Jerusalem. One of the most famous and endearing passages is when He says, after going through the speech against the Pharisees, He says in verse 37, "O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, the city that kills the prophets and stones those who are sent to it, how often would I have gathered your children together as a hen gathers her brood under her wings, and you would not. See, your house is left to you desolate. For I tell you, you will not see me again until you say, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. He had earlier wept when he was riding the donkey into Jerusalem and then the triumphal entry. He wept over Jerusalem. Here he's weeping over Jerusalem again. And 2 days later, when he is carrying his cross to Golgotha, and he is having to walk that stretch to Golgotha in Matthew 23, 26 through 30, he will once again give a warning, a weeping, an endearing statement to the people of Jerusalem. He says, do not weep for me, but weep for yourselves and for your children. For the days are coming when they will say, blessed are the barren, and the wombs that never bore, and the breasts that never nursed. And they will begin to say to the mountains, fall on us, and to the hills, cover us. He's talking about the destruction that's going to come upon them. Why did he warn? He warned out of love. When Jesus looked at the rich young ruler and said, go and sell your possessions and give to the poor. In Mark's account, it says he looked at him and loved him. He told him that out of love. You know, parents, we tell our children things, we give them warnings out of love. We're getting close to the time when Austin's going to get his driver's license. He's going to turn 16 in November, and of course you got the permit, then you got to go another 6 months and get the license. And you know, parents that have faced that, many of you have, you know, you tell your kids, you say, you warn them. Now, driving fast has a lot of dangers. It can kill yourself, kill others. It's very dangerous. And you give them warnings about speeding and warnings about defensive driving and warnings about what it's like merging on to the parkway and all these kind of warnings that you're giving your kids when they get out there on the road and start driving because you know it's dangerous. Now, why do you give them those warnings? Well, you give them those warnings because you love them. Because you want them to be saved, because you care about them, and you're warning them, and you know the dangers that are there. You've been in some accidents, and you've been in those situations before yourself and driven a lot, and you know it's dangerous, and you were a teenager once too. And so you warn out of love. You warn out of love. And Jesus is warning us out of love. He's warning Jerusalem out of love. And then he offers two serious warnings. Two serious warnings. The first one is, he warns them that the end of Judaism in Jerusalem is coming. It's AD 33. In AD 70, 37 years later, Jerusalem will be utterly destroyed. Judaism as they knew it, the temple and all the compound and all that went into Jerusalem, is going to be utterly destroyed in the famous destruction of Jerusalem in AD 70 by the Roman Emperor Titus. And he's going to utterly destroy that. And in Matthew 24, Jesus is asked about the temple. And this leads him to answer about when this temple is going to be destroyed. And he surprises them and shocks them by telling them signs to know when the coming of this temple destruction will be. And he talks about famines and wars and all these kind of events happening. And then he talks about what the prophet Daniel has said in verse 15. And in Luke's account, he refers to when the Roman army is surrounding Jerusalem. And all of this first section about false prophets and false Christ and them fleeing to get away from this and about the days that are there, all of this is talking about the destruction of Jerusalem. Down to verse number 34. 34 is the continental divide of chapter 24 because everything before that basically points toward the destruction of Jerusalem. Verse 34 says this, truly I say to you, this generation will not pass away until all these things take place. All these things are going to happen upon this generation. Jerusalem will be destroyed. My words are true, verse 35. And then verse 36, but concerning that day and hour, no one knows. Then he transitions or changes into talking about his final coming. In Mark 13, 1 through 30, he deals, same kind of way, he deals with the destruction of Jerusalem. And basically the entire chapter, Luke 21, deals with the destruction of Jerusalem. Jesus had a burden for these people. Imagine what it would be like to be walking around New York on September the 9th, September 10th, either one of those days, of 2001. And to be a divine prophet and know that the next morning airplanes were going to be flown in those buildings and great destruction would happen. How would you be looking at that differently? You'd be looking at it, you'd be thinking about these huge buildings, they're going to come crumbling down the next day. And you probably would have tears in your eyes and you'd probably be weeping and you'd be thinking about this great destruction and you probably would be telling people what? Hey, all of y'all working in this upstairs, don't go to work the next morning. Get out, flee, run to the mountains, get as far away from here as you can. That's what Jesus is doing. Jesus is saying, I see, I know what's going to come. Run, get away. Josephus tells us that some 1.1 million people, numbers have sometimes been brought into question of Josephus' numbers, but his descriptions are very accurate, and maybe his numbers are accurate, were killed in Jerusalem. The amount of bloodshed was incredible. In fact, it is said that the Roman soldiers, when they entered, it was a siege that lasted from April to August. It was a siege that caused great starvation, caused them to suffer greatly, and then once they broke through the walls and got into the city, they murdered, enslaved, and destroyed. Josephus says that in Jerusalem there was about 1.1 million died, but over the surrounding region about 1.3 million total died. And so Jesus is warning them about the end of Judaism and the destruction that's coming. But notice also, this is what's important for us. He warns them about the end of the world coming suddenly. By the way, I don't know, history also mentions that the Christians fled or got out during that time period as well. That because of these warnings, they were able to escape and get out and did survive at much higher rates than the Jews who stayed in town. Now look at the end of the world is coming in verses 36 to 51. But concerning that day and hour, no one knows, not even the angels of heaven nor the Son, but the Father only. He's talking about the final day. And he talks about it being like the days of Noah. And in those days, no one knew when the flood was going to come. Look at verse 43. But know this, that if the master of the house had known what part of the night the thief was coming, he would have stayed awake and would not have let his house be broken into. Therefore, you also must be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour you do not expect. Verses 45 through 51 teach the same thing. Mark 13 teaches the same message, that the end of the world is coming, and it's coming suddenly. Am I getting a little bit of noise in there? I'm not sure why. I preached this sermon one other time this morning and didn't do it. Maybe that helped. All right, so he's emphasizing the second coming and that no one knows. No one knows. Now, these are serious warnings. He wants us to seriously think about them. Now, obviously, for our context, 2,000 years later, the first warning doesn't have any significance per se to us. But the second warning has great significance. What do we do with that? Why would he emphasize that? Because he wanted us to be prepared. He wanted us to be awake. And that leads to this point of application, that Jesus' warning shifts responsibility to us. His warning says, I'm telling you what's going to happen. You've got then to be responsible for that. Be prepared. Stay awake. Don't go to sleep. We've preached on it other times and we've studied it. And I'm not trying to do a detailed study, but I want you to look at Matthew 25, just a survey. And look at Matthew 25, and it's the emphasizing the idea that you've got to be prepared. You've got to be ready. The first one is the parable of the 10 virgins. And you have the idea of verse 13, watch, for you know neither the day nor hour. You don't know when he's coming. And then you have the parable of the talents. Five talent person, the two talent person, the one talent person, the five and two multiply their talents, they invest their talents, they use them for good, then they are able to present the Lord back 10 talents, 4 talents, and then you have the one talent man who buried his talent. And notice that Jesus uses end of time terms to talk about this when he says in verse 21, well done and good and faithful servant, you'll be faithful over little, I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master. You're able to go into heaven because you used your talents well. You used your resources well. You gave them back at the accounting at the day of judgment. And then in the one talent person, in verses 26 and following, who is said to be a wicked and slothful servant, this man is going to be, verse 30, cast the worthless servant into the outer darkness, in that place where there'll be weeping and gnashing of teeth. So if you use your talents well, if you use your resources well, you enter into the joy of the Lord. But if you hide your talents, if you bury your talents, when he comes at an hour you do not expect, you're going to then be cast into outer darkness where there'll be weeping and gnashing of teeth. And then he gives the final judgment scene. When he separates the sheep from the goats, those who have done acts of love, acts of care, visited, cared for the hungry, cared for those who are strangers, those who are naked, he did those things, then you will receive a blessing and enter into the joy of the Lord. But those who did not do those things will be cast away. And he says, verse 46, these will go into eternal punishment, but the righteous into eternal life. When Christ came to the end of his life, he's emphasizing judgment and our responsibility to be prepared for the day of reckoning, for the day of accounting, for the day of judgment. And the basic idea there is we've got to be awake. We've got to be vigilant. We've got to be prepared. We've got to be sober. We've got to be ready for his return. This month is one of the most famous awareness months, I guess, of any month. And may not be emphasized as much this year as it is some years, but this is October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And you see the pink ribbons a lot of places. And historically, over the last several years, it's been one of the big months to emphasize awareness. You know, each day in our culture today, each day has something. If you looked it up on a calendar, one of my favorites, you know, National Donut Day or some day like that, right? But and each month has a different awareness. But October has Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And it's been spent millions of dollars on that through the years to really promote that. Why is that? Why is that? Why do we have any kind of you know, heart disease awareness month or blood pressure awareness month or breast cancer awareness? Why do we have these various emphases? What's the point in giving out these warnings? Well, I think the point is early detection saves lives. That if people are made aware of this, that they are warned of the dangers, then who has the responsibility? The person does. And if you look at statistics, thankfully, because of treatment, but also they say because of this awareness, the death rates have decreased steadily since 2013. 1 in 8 women still have the likelihood of having breast cancer sometime in their life. 1 in 883 men have that likelihood, so it's a much higher likelihood for women. There's millions of women that are survivors of breast cancer, and many in our church are. But here's the point. Why do we have this awareness? Why do we say, you need to be aware of this, you need to know about, think about this? Because we want people to take responsibility for it and do preventive care, because early detection saves lives. Why does Jesus, why does he constantly throughout his ministry emphasize the second coming? Why does he constantly come back to be prepared, be awake, be watching, be sober, be ready? It's going to come upon you like a thief in the night, like the days of Noah. You've got to be ready. Why does he come back? Because he wants the responsibility to move from him to us. Now, most people don't give much attention to those warnings. Most people don't think much about Christ's return. They live their normal life. They go about it without thinking much about it. They fail to take that responsibility seriously. We need to understand that we have responsibility. He has given us the information, the knowledge. He has warned us. It's now upon us to take His warning seriously. In Pearl Harbor, we had numerous warnings. We even had 132 miles out, airplanes flying on the radar toward us. We did not take those warnings seriously. In our own lives, we've got to take the warning of Christ seriously. We've got to understand that we have responsibility to be sober, to be vigilant, to be awake, ready for His return, to be prepared. This morning, if you're not prepared, if you are not ready for the Lord's return, then don't leave these doors, don't leave this building without being ready, having put Christ on in baptism. If you need to rededicate your life and come back to the Lord, if we can help you in any way, come together as we stand and as we sing.
To face the judge.